This is Biz. I'm a stay-at-home mom with a baby boy and a daughter who's a full-blown kid.
And I'm Teresa, a part-time working mom with two little boys.
This is a show about life after giving life. Don't listen with your kids, because there will be swears. This is One Bad Mother. This week on One Bad Mother, when do we get back to feeling normal again? And what is normal? Plus, Biz and Teresa get another case of baby fever, and we talk to filmmaker and creator of the web series Queer Mama, Haley Jude.
Woo!
Woo! Woo! Baby fever! Do, 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 do. Baby fever. Isn't that Boogie Fever? Isn't that a popular song from the 70s?
Yeah.
I've been listening on my Spotify account. Or Songza. That's what I listen to is Songza, because you can, like, they even actually have groupings of songs called Songs for Moms When Hanging Out with Kids. It's a lot of Jackson 5 and, like, that kind of thing. But anyway, there is an AM in the 70s, 70s AM playlist.
Yeah.
So it's a lot of Boogie Fever and then some Stevie Wonder and shit. It's great. Anyway,
that sounds awesome.
It is, in fact, what I enjoy cruising my evenings down to. A little Hall & Oates, Stevie Wonder, a little America.
Great.
It's good. And Stefan the whole time's like, what is this? What's this song? What's this song? What's this song?
You're like, go look at my phone.
He's like, there was F. Why is it AM? Why not FM? I'm like, because it was just AM. Once.
Yeah. I remember
when I was
a kid. I remember. Well, really?
Because I used to, when I was little, I can remember being out on the porch with the transistor radio that only picked up AM stations. And
how old are you?
A million years old. Like AM, and even if it had FM, that's not where the music was playing at the time. Everything was on AM stations. So my memory is of zero
what
FM
remember,
until 80s.
What
the
I
80s
remember is my
FM.
Parents telling me, isn't it crazy, but just so you know, it used to be that all this great stuff we're hearing on FM used to be
on AM.
And I was like, you're crazy, Mom. You're crazy, Dad.
1974. Boogie Fever. Anyway, okay. Teresa.
Yeah.
On this very special episode where we talk about music and radio stations from previous decades, from the 1900s.
Yeah.
How are you? You want another baby?
I do.
What the fuck is wrong with you?
It makes me want to swear.
Yeah,
it makes me want to swear. It makes me just go, fuck.
Yeah.
Like, I just want that to stop. I want it to go away. And it keeps, like, catching me
by
surprise, off guard. And I don't want it in me, but it's there. And it's so...
You don't want either the feeling
or
the actual baby in you.
No, it's... And I can't, like, the best case scenario is I just say to myself, just let it wash over you.
Yeah.
It will pass. It will pass. But it's hard because, yes, it will pass. It does pass. But then it's there again, like, the next fucking day.
Yeah. So this is what's weird is when I wanted to get pregnant with Katie Bell first, I never felt like the crazy. I was just like, I know that I would like to have a child, so we will start trying to have a child.
Okay.
Yeah. Then with Ellis, I remember again, it was, I know we want to have another child, so I'm going to work. So I never had that like, man, I just want to be. But now that I've had the two, I feel like some strange level
it's different
chemical mixture has kicked in, and it's just like you said, it like washes over you, and you're like and you know what it is? It's like I'll pass cute pregnant women. I need to be surrounded by more of the 38-week, 40-week pregnant women, not the like 28-week, 29-week pregnant.
I don't want to see your second trimester pregnancy.
Yeah, I want...
Get that out of my sight.
Yeah, get me your cute.
It's too cute.
I want cute... Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
The cute pregnancy. You're still out. You're playing.
Yeah.
A lot of energy.
Yeah.
Show me your... I'm fucking tired of this. And that will immediately...
And I have to go through childbirth.
Yeah, right. But there's something about like the excitement...
I know.
...of having a baby inside me. Little friend.
I know.
Inside... Making me, our guest today is 33 weeks pregnant, and I was looking at some of her things that she has online, and like the sonogram picture. I want a sonogram picture.
And how exciting that is to have that, look at that, and be thinking, I don't know.
What is that?
I don't know.
I cannot literally have another baby.
You know, I know, and that's the thing. Like, I don't, it's really weird because it's so strong, the urge is so strong, that it does make you think, like, is the universe like telling me that I should?
Yeah,
like is somebody sending me a message that like this is the right choice for me. And then you start thinking about your life and like how that
horrible
would affect
it is.
No, just like how like having a whole other person would affect your life.
We were talking about this.
Yeah.
We met up this weekend and we were talking. I was like, you sat down and I was like, I want another baby.
Yeah.
And you were like, me too. And then you were like, once you add the third, which is would be what we would be doing, you're talking major changes. You're talking got to have a bigger
different living
arrangements,
how
different
do you
care.
Travel? How do you have babysitters? How do you...
Everything changes. Yeah. Totally different ballpark.
Yeah.
Yeah. And yet...
And then like and then also I'll have these moments where it's like just me and Simon. Like we'll go do something, the two of us. And it's so kind of just lovely and precious. And I'm like, it's so nice to just be like one-on-one with my kids sometimes. Like, what is making me feel like I need like to pile 10 kids in a wheelbarrow? Like, you know what I mean?
That's like, right. The more the merrier.
Even like one child is like so just is like kind of like endless joy and amazingness.
Right.
Like, why?
That does not mean that eight more of them equals one like limitless
more
joy and amazement.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm sure it does on some
level.
Because I don't have eight kids to do that with. But like,
but it also limits your time with each of them, I would think.
I just feel like it would make me angrier at each child as they go down the list. Because I'm already just like, cut him out. Hi, Ellis. Because I have to be like more precious with him. I feel weirder yelling at him than I do her. And I'm like, well, great. If I just put another one, I'll be like, Ellis, Katie Bell. Hello, new baby. Like, and then I just become that one. I become that mom.
I was talking to a friend about this the other day, and she said she compared it to wanting, like, having adulterous thoughts, like wanting to, like, sleep with people outside of your partner.
Wow.
And she's
interesting.
She's like, it's just like that. Like, we have these biological urges, and we have to just, like, rein them in. Like, you don't just, like, go have sex with whoever. Like, just because you feel like it doesn't mean you should go do that
right
now. And I was like, whoa, that is a really interesting comparison.
Yeah, I think that's it. Well, I think this sort of...
Having another baby is just like committing adultery.
We are really good Catholics. So let's don't do it.
Yeah,
well, you can do it. Do it.
I might.
You should.
I don't know.
You should do it.
I don't think I should.
If you do it, I'm going to really want another one.
I can't
have another one. I'm done.
Well, you're not. Your body doesn't think you're
done. My body currently doesn't think I'm done. Well, let's agree at this moment to not do that.
Okay. I can agree for right now,
sure.
I think.
Sure.
Okay.
This show holds us so accountable.
I know.
On so many levels. You know what this ties well, this baby fever ties well into, is that thing that having babies does to a person, and that is making you feel less normal.
Mm-hmm.
And brings up the question, well, after you have that kid, when you get back to feeling normal.
Mm-hmm.
So today we're going to explore that specific question.
Mm-hmm.
When do we go back to feeling normal, and what is normal?
Please take a moment to remember, if you're friends of the hosts of One Bad Mother, you should assume that when we talk about other moms, we're talking about you.
If you are married to the host of One Bad Mother, we definitely are talking about you.
Nothing we say constitutes professional parenting advice.
Biz and Teresa's children are brilliant, lovely, and exceedingly extraordinary.
Nothing said on this podcast about them implies otherwise.
Teresa.
Yeah.
When do you go back to feeling normal?
After the first 6 months.
Is that for...
No.
I know.
I have no idea.
All right. So let's just take a moment and say, I feel like there is a question, this question of returning to normalcy.
Yeah.
Gets asked a lot.
Yeah.
To mom or dad to dad or parent to parent, whatever. I mean, anybody can go through this specific sort of question. And I know that, like, without even thinking about it, I've asked myself this or pondered the answer to this question.
Mm-hmm.
And that is, you know, when do you go back to feeling normal? And I can see it sort of coming out of the original place of the first couple of months after having a baby where hormones are completely out of control, your life is completely upside down, that everything you thought you were prepared for, you weren't. You may also be nailing a lot of things, but it's still like sleep and feeding and eating and emotions. That is not a normal time on some level because it is so different than whatever you were doing the week before you had that baby.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that kind of pulls that question, like, when does it go back to not feeling like this?
Yeah.
A little bit.
Yeah.
And one of the reasons we thought we would explore this today was on our private One Bed Mother Facebook group, where we have a lot of great conversations going on about parenting. It's a really safe and private place to come on and have these conversations. The question of when do I go back to feeling normal came up. And I thought there, we both, Teresa and I, felt there was a really interesting discussion that happened through that. And Teresa, you actually started responding to it first. Tell me a little bit about...
Yeah, it was cool. I said, well, I think with the first baby, I think I started getting used to the new normal around like 14, maybe 16 months.
Right.
Postpartum. But then I think after my second, it took a little longer. And now with my second, who's now about 20 months old, I'm like just in the last month or so starting to feel more normal. And when I said that, one of our awesome group members commented, and a few other people had commented as well. And if you look back through what the comments said, almost every single person said, I'm just now starting to feel normal.
Normal.
And one of our group members commented, you know, it's interesting. I've noticed for myself and with others that when we're answering this question, a lot of us seem to say, I'm just now starting to feel normal, whatever this is. If it's 4 months postpartum, if it's 6 months, if it's a year, if it's 2 years, if it's 4 years, whenever, wherever we are right now, we seem to assess ourselves as just starting to be normal. And whatever came before, that was not normal.
Right. Even
but
if we had said,
we're feeling normal.
Right.
Even if we had. And,
right.
And I thought about that, and I thought that was so interesting. And I was thinking back, and I was like, thinking, definitely I have had this thought since I had my second, since I had Oscar. I've definitely had this thought already multiple times. Like, okay, I'm getting there now.
Right.
Okay, we're getting normal. We're getting more normal. But I still, if I look back at those times, I'm like, my perception of what was going on at that time does not feel like, it does not feel normal. And so I posed this question to her, what does that mean that we're doing this? Like, what does it mean that we're all doing that? Because I feel like I'm doing that too. And she said, and I'm totally not going to do it justice, because she said it in this really eloquent way, but she was just basically saying, you know, I think becoming a parent and giving birth and or just becoming a parent, it's such a mind fuck, basically.
Yeah.
It's such a transformative experience. And it's kind of scary and it's mind-blowing. And then it doesn't just go back to normal. It's
ever.
It's constantly changing. And so wherever we are, we kind of comfort ourselves with telling ourselves we got this now.
She talks about adaptability
now.
She talks about the human beings being incredibly adaptable as a species, and that maybe calling something normal out loud helps us to adapt to the fact that it is in fact not normal.
Right.
You know, and
And that no matter what happens, we can say it's normal because we've figured it out. Like, we adapted to it.
I think that takes me back to the question is such a, it's one of the, I don't know, it falls into one of those categories of like, what does that question even mean? But it's coming out of my mouth.
Yeah.
I don't think any of us are thinking on that deep of a level.
Yeah.
When do I go back to feeling normal?
Right.
Or, but when you start pondering it, what are we hoping to get to? What is normal?
Yeah.
Like, is normal, and I think when I was thinking about this before the show, I was like, is this question the same as, am I the same person I was before I had a baby? You know, and we've talked about that at great length on this show. You know, I know that I'm coming out of this a different person.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it is such a transformative experience. However you get those kids in your house, everything has changed. And who your identity is. Is the normal question about identity, Or is it totally just about feeling like you've got some control over things? Like, because I think they're different, because I think even in the process of trying to sort out my new identity as mom, as wife, as friend, as, you know, individual, it's hard to even explore those if my life isn't feeling normal, if I don't feel. So for me, I feel they're two separate questions, but I don't think that that means that normal isn't still a serious, you're not still looking for a serious answer of what are we hoping to achieve by normal?
Mm-hmm.
And so it's like, is normal where your routine is exactly like it was before you had kids? Like, I mean, are you looking for like routine? Are you looking for where you felt like you could do a million things, you know, where you felt like you had some control of the, you know, the world around you? Is it 20-something-year-old biz before even having kids or being married? Is it, like, what are we hoping to feel like?
Right.
You know, like, and why is it when we say, oh, things start to feel normal now?
Yeah.
What's going on that makes it feel normal? I think usually for me it means I'm actually enjoying, like, my Stefan and, like, the kids, and I'm not feeling super stressed out, and I feel like...
like nothing is wrong?
Yeah, I've had some time to do some stuff for myself, and, like, the kids are kind of, like, it feels like things are balanced a little bit. That's usually when I'm like, oh, things are kind of getting back to normal for me.
Yeah.
But I don't know if that's what everybody's normal is.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? But, like, you know, or am I just praying and hoping that one day I'll wake up and it'll be, this is not my life. Like, I mean, in all seriousness, is that my long-term goal for normal? Huh. Right? Like, does that make sense?
Like that, you mean like that you're, like that it'll go back to the way it was before?
Yeah, what are we hoping for by normal? I mean, I guess when you honestly think about...
it's never, well, that's the thing. It's never going to go back. Like, it's never going to go back.
Right.
Do you know what I mean?
No, I agree. So why are we asking the question? Why are we clinging so desperately to this idea that, so is it just
maybe it's just getting the hang of things.
Yeah.
Like, do you know what I'm saying? Like, that feeling of, like, fish out of water.
Yeah.
And then you just start to know how to do the things that you have to do every day.
Right.
You know, and not necessarily, and I think there is a sense of at least contentment that goes along with feeling that you are capable to handle the things that you need to handle.
Right.
And I think that's got to be a big part of it. Because, like, before kids, whatever it was you were doing every day, you probably had a handle on because you've been taking care of yourself for however many years, you know?
Right, right.
And then...
it's sort of like first day of school where you're like, it doesn't feel normal at all.
Yeah.
And then after a week, you know where your classrooms are, you know where your locker is, you know what you're supposed to do every day, and it feels normal.
Or like with a new job. Like I used to say starting a new job, always the first month was pure hell. Like first month was for me was always so hard at any new job. And then like I would start to just, it just fell into place. And that, I guess, would become normal. So I think, I think that's a working definition for me.
Like, okay,
that you can handle it.
You like
feel whatever
like you
it is,
can handle
you can handle.
It. Right, and I guess that's what makes it so difficult is that your children are not on board with that particular scenario.
No, because they're constantly changing.
Right,
because they constantly need different things.
They're like little volcanoes. They're growing.
Yeah.
I mean, Ellis has 3 pairs of shoes we bought 3 months ago. Not even three months ago. And I tried to get one on his foot yesterday, and I was like, this is completely not fit. I mean, but that's like again, like little science, but they just grow. And then
they're
and that's painful, and teeth, and
that's
painful, and I'm speaking, and that's great. And even the older kids are like, ah, I have new emotions, and do I like somebody? Do I not? Like,
I love art.
And
I love art. and I remember there was like a big jump for us where we went from, with Simon, just being able to be really specific about what was expected rather than like explaining things all the time.
Right.
We're just like, no, this is the way it is. This is the way we do things. And that worked for like a year. And then all of a sudden, like he was like 2.5, 3. And like we needed to like do a lot more like negotiating with him and explaining the way things work and the repercussions of not doing things that way. And this whole, which like it's just, you once you figure out the way your kid functions, it's going to change.
So I guess the question then is it just that it slows down for us? Like, for adults, we don't have that much going on anymore, do we?
Right.
You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
We don't have, like, random things happening. Everyone having growing pains in the middle of the night or, like, the only time we do is when we're pregnant.
Right.
Where everything's out of control and, like, hormones and I love art and suddenly I want to eat food that I've never had before and now everything makes me cry or makes me laugh hysterically.
Oh, it's so much fun. I can't wait to do it again.
Oh, let's get pregnant again.
Okay.
But, like, outside of that particular...
Yeah.
Crazy moment.
Yeah.
We're all pretty mellowed out. Maybe that's why.
You can create things. You can travel. You can, like, move to a country.
Well, or you could live life like you do, like we talked last week, and you could just try and make everything super suffering for yourself.
Oh, yeah.
Right?
Just make everything hard for yourself. Take on other people's problems. You know, never say no to anyone.
But overall... You mean saying yes to life, Teresa. I do wonder if... If because things do peter out a little bit for us in being totally overwhelming, why clinging to something that feels normal becomes so important suddenly?
Yeah.
You know, like, this is when I go to sleep, and this is what I enjoy going out, and this is what I do. And I mean, lots of people are incredibly spontaneous.
Totally.
But that is your normal, and that's pretty mellow and compared to what's going on to, like, kids
up
until the time they're, like, really 25.
That's so true. Yeah, that's so true.
So, I wonder if that's part of it.
Yeah.
I also like that you were using the word new normal.
Yeah.
I feel like that forgives a lot.
I feel like that is actually, like, it's possible to get to a new normal versus you're just never going to be the way you were. I mean,
Well, it's like, right, well, like, my mother, a couple of years ago, had a blackout fall moment and really got shaken up and was very slow sort of in recovering, that kind of thing. And she goes to the doctor, you know, it's about a year later. And during this process, she was like, will I feel normal again? Will I go back to myself? And he was like, you'll go back to your 70-year-old self. You're not going to wake up and suddenly... You're not going back to your 40-year-old self or your 50-year-old. So, like, set your expectations at when you're back to your best is your 70-something self.
Yeah.
Your best is not 30 years ago. And I thought that was so interesting.
That is interesting.
And so relatable because I do think that even after having kids or any big life change, illness or a move or whatever, this expectation of... going back or getting back to yourself, this weird pressure or weird thought that you're going back to something that you were even 5 or 10 years ago, that's just not a realistic setting.
And why does that? It seems comfortable, I guess, because we know what that was. But also our perception of the past is so skewed.
Oh.
Like it's the
same
way. Having babies is really fun. Like it's the same way. Yeah.
Pregnancy's great.
Yeah. We can go back and be like, oh, we were so excited. And you know what we should really do is go back and listen to this show.
We go back to episode 36, the one where I have the massive emotional breakdown of returning back at 5 weeks.
But I mean, there's so many things about the way our memory changes that affects like what is normal. You know, like I could say like, oh, I had everything so together before I had kids, and I could go back to myself before I had kids, and like there were lots of things that I didn't have under control.
Yeah.
Yeah, for one thing, I really wanted to have a baby, and I didn't have that.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, congratulations. Now you do.
Yay.
Yeah, no, but I know what you mean. Like, I don't know if I would want to go back to that either.
Yeah.
And, so I guess the thing comes back down to, what do you even want the new normal to be? And maybe the best we can do is accept and spin it that new normal is simply... being comfortable getting through the day and like what the circumstances surrounding your day.
Yeah. And also like being ready for change if you can. I mean, I guess we're kind of never ready because we don't know what change will bring, but like just like accepting that just being.
Being ready to roll. You're going to tell me I can't control everything. My stomach hurts.
You can control everything today. You've got it for today, Biz.
Thank God.
Today.
Thank God.
Good job.
No, honestly, though, I think that is part of the mantra is that saying that I finally feel normal or things are getting back to normal can, in fact, allow us to have that confidence to handle whatever comes the next day. And like you said, I think our memory forces us into thinking that things aren't as dramatic in terms of changes as they really have been.
Sure.
So I guess good luck, everybody.
Yeah.
Getting back to normalcy. Whatever that may be for you.
Hey, this is Pop Rocket. We're your source for all pop culture information.
It's an intellectual and incredibly snark-filled discussion about pop culture by five cranky Hollywood 30-somethings. No name-calling, no rudeness, just straight talk and a lot of role-play.
I'm only 30-something for another year.
Me too. And I don't tell anybody I'm 30-something.
Pop Rocket comes out every week from MaximumFun.org.
Hey, you know what it's time for? This week's Genius and Fails. This is the part of the show where we share our genius moment of the week, as well as our failures, and feel better about ourselves by hearing yours. You can share some of your own by calling 206-350-9485. That's 206-350-9485.
Teresa.
Yes?
Genius fail time. I would like you to share a genius moment with me.
Wow.
Oh, my God.
Oh, my God.
I saw what you did.
Oh, my God.
I'm paying attention.
Wow.
You, Mom, are a genius.
Oh, my God. That's fucking genius.
I would love to share a genius moment. My almost four-year-old has been potty trained for a year. But still hates stopping what he's doing and going to use the potty.
Sure.
And sometimes, who cares? I just leave him to suffer because he doesn't really have accidents anymore.
Right.
He just runs around like a crazy person until he can't handle it anymore and goes and sits down and goes pee. But if we are about to leave the house, I do say you have to use the potty before we leave the house. That's just the rule. But he still fights me on it. Like, pretty much every single time, it's a whole fight, you know?
Right.
And so it's like, are you going to go on your own or do you need my help? I'm going to count to three and then I'm going to take you. And, I mean, it's just like that every time.
Yeah.
It's so stupid. But it occurred to me one time that he doesn't have a problem using the potty for some reason is right before he gets into the bath at night. Like, he knows to use the potty before you get in the bath so you won't have to feel like you need to go potty in the bath. So he always goes without trouble getting into the bath. I have no idea why.
Weird.
I don't understand his brain.
Doesn't matter.
But he does. And
sure.
So the other day, we were getting ready to leave, and I'm having this regular annoying fight with him. And I go, Simon, just pretend that you're about to take a bath. And he goes, okay, I'm going to pretend I'm about to take a bath. And he goes and he sits down and pees and that's it. And then, like, it worked again the next day. Like, I did it again the next day. And I said to Jesse, I wonder how many of these I have left before this wears off.
The magic card. You've got out of free jail-free cards in your pocket. Right.
Yeah. Anyway, it was great.
Good job.
Thanks.
Great. I don't think I shared this one. I hope I didn't. I took some paper towel rolls and I stuck them on the wall with some painter's tape.
Uh-huh.
Made a little tube.
Yeah.
It's a very Pinteresty thing. Mine looks very much like
it. Sounds beautiful so far.
I was going to say, mine just looks like I took some paper towel rolls and taped them with crazy tape from painter's tape. And then I make balls out of painter's tape because it's just the right weight.
Uh-huh.
And I give it to Ellis and he drops them down the tubes and together we go, whee!
Oh.
And I have it right in the kitchen, on the kitchen wall.
Yeah.
So that I can be doing something in the kitchen. And he refers to the whole thing as, wee.
Yeah.
And goes over and does it. And it doesn't hurt the wall.
That's amazing.
It was really stupid, guys. And it was stupid, but it works really well.
Yeah.
And it's been up on our wall for like a month now.
That's great.
And he just comes and goes to it whenever he wants.
That's great.
Yeah.
Love it.
Easy.
We have two dogs, and they like to play in our backyard, and inevitably my 4 and 7-year-old kids will be out playing in the backyard, and I'll be in the kitchen, roughly keeping an eye on them while I make dinner and leave messages for one bad mother. And so they always call and say, Mom, there's a pile of dog poop back here, and I won't be able to do anything about it because my hands are covered in raw chicken or whatever. And so I don't want to ask them to do it because they're probably going to get it all over themselves, and I would spend more time cleaning them up than I would have if I just picked it up myself. So I came up with a genius idea. I asked them, we have a stack of little, you know, when they stick those flags in the ground where they've sprayed pesticides or, you know, where they've come checked for, you know, we've had some issues with power outages, so they come and check to make sure where all the power lines are, and they stick those little red and orange flags in the grass, and this has been several months that nobody's come to collect them, so I picked them all up from where they are, put a little pile by the back deck, and I told the girls, anytime they see a pile of dog poop, stick a flag right next to it, and that way, they know to avoid it, I know to avoid it, and when I finally have a few minutes to clean it up, I know exactly where to find all the piles. So that has saved me a little bit of sanity. I will talk to you girls later. Thank you. Love the show. Bye.
That's the most adorable dog poop story I've ever heard.
Put a flag in it.
Yeah.
Just go stick
a flag
in it.
Well, the flag doesn't go in the poop.
I'm sure it does. I'm sure those
kids it goes next to the
poop. Who cares? Who cares?
Yeah, I guess who cares?
Who cares? You know, it's not
in
like,
the poop seems grosser to
me. Hold it off. You still got to pick it up. Either way, it's genius.
Yeah, it's great.
I appreciate this adorable. I don't know why this is adorable.
I don't know
to
why
me.
Either, but it's great.
It's the flag.
It's so cute.
It is.
Little
flag
piles
in
of
it.
Poop.
Put flags. Watch out. It's like a little army battlefield. Ah, you little soldiers out there. Da 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 da. Incoming. I don't know why. Anyway. Failures.
Fail, 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 fail!
You suck.
Teresa, please share your failure with me today.
Okay, my fail is also about the strange workings of my almost four-year-old's brain.
Great.
Right? So we're driving in the car as a family yesterday, and he starts talking about this puppet show, like marionette, puppet show that they put on at his preschool a year ago.
Yeah,
he starts talking about it. There's this one character marionette that he didn't like, that kind of scared him, that was like a big gorilla with sunglasses that sang really loud and was like kind of goofy.
Don't take him to Chuck E. Cheese.
Right.
Go ahead.
And so it kind of like bothered him at the time, and whatever, he was like new to the school at the time also, and I don't know why it rubbed him the wrong way. But so I said to him, well, you know, and he said, well, I really don't like that show. I don't want to see that show because of the gorilla. And I really didn't like him and, you know, whatever. And I said, well, that's totally fine. And we've talked about this numerous times,
endlessly,
but not for a while. So I said, well, that, you know, it's totally fine. You don't have to like everything that you see. And I said, you know, also, Simon, you're always growing and changing, and different things are going to make you feel different ways. But at that time, you were two. You weren't even three yet. You were like almost three. You were two. And it might have seemed scary to you then, but maybe now, if you were to see it, it wouldn't be scary to you. Like, you're always changing, and, you know, things aren't as scary maybe to you now as they were then. And he just kind of looks at me. And so then I said, but, you know, the reality is we're never going to see that particular marionette show again. Like, we're never going to see that again.
Yeah.
So I don't think you need to worry about it.
Right.
And he starts crying because he really wanted to see the show again.
Oh.
Like, out of nowhere. Like, then he's all of a sudden, but I want to see that show, crying.
Oh.
So then I just looked at Jesse and I said, I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know.
I don't know.
Mount.
I don't. Yeah.
Mount.
I should have just not even said anything to him.
Yeah. Yeah. Good job comforting your child, Teresa.
I know.
Great. Now you're going to have to figure out how to get him exposed to that marionette show again. Well, you suck. You're bad parenting.
I know.
I currently cannot get back to a place of normalcy. I don't have like a, I don't really have a like, did anything super fail oriented with the kids or because I've just, since we got back from the trip, I've just been on a high gear to just make sure that everything doesn't fall apart and is back to where it's supposed to be. And like, which in itself is probably a fail of some kind because it's very tiring.
Yeah.
And it leaves me feeling very cranky. And also, it is completely impossible to keep everything as it should be with two children, two cats, and a partner.
Yeah, that doesn't just sound like a good feeling.
That just they're not on board with my plan to keep everything as it should. So my failure is just that, like, forcing myself to come to terms mm-hmm. with my needs.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, which doesn't always play out very well.
I'm sorry.
Usually it just leads to, like, a stink week. Stink week. Week of me being a fucking pill. So, sorry, universe and family.
This morning, my one-year-old woke up in my bed because he was teething something fierce. And he was nursing a little more than he normally does. And so when I touched him and he was kind of wet, I thought, oh, yeah, that's pretty classic. Probably leaked through his diaper in the night. And I thought, man, he is really wet. I must have nursed him a lot more than I thought. And then I picked him up, took him into the changing table, and he was soaking wet all over. And I realized when I opened up his jammies that he wasn't wearing a diaper. That's a husband fail. He's the one who puts the diaper on at night. And now I'm washing all the sheets of my house. Besides, we got bonus morning bath. So fail on my partner, but we're all surviving. Thank you.
That's amazing.
It is amazing.
How do you forget a diaper?
Well, I just love that. I mean, I just love that whatever's happening for dad at this particular moment is so just like, oh, good night.
Yeah.
Like, I just.
So I guess jammies and.
Yeah, but like, I've done, like, I've never not put a diaper on. It is such an impressive new level of fail. So congratulations, dad.
Yeah.
And good job, mom. She sounds totally like, yeah, I just forgot it.
Yeah.
My husband's not a dick or anything.
Totally.
He just didn't put a diaper on the baby.
No, it's not like he did it on purpose.
Yeah, it's not like he's like, fuck you, I'm not putting a diaper on. I don't even know we have kids. He's not doing that. He's just like, just didn't do it.
Also, it could have been so much worse. Like, the kid could totally have pooped.
Shit, a storm.
Yeah.
Like, a shit storm could have been happening. That could have been way worse, which probably would have made that call a different call.
It would have, yeah.
So, good job, universe. But, you know, like, I've done the old, like, did I even leave the lights? Like, I left the lights on in Alice's room one night. Like,
oh,
that one night, right?
Yeah.
I was just like, why is he up screaming all night?
Because the lights
are fucking on. So, anyway, you guys are doing something. Not particularly well that day, but you did it.
Yeah.
So.
There it is.
There it is.
You are the greatest mom I've ever known. I love you, I love you. When I have a problem, I call you on the phone. I love you, I love you.
Teresa.
Yes.
Let's call a mom.
Okay.
Today we are actually going to call a soon-to-be mom.
Oh, my God.
This week, we are calling soon-to-be mom Haley Jude, who is a San Francisco-based filmmaker, contributor to Elle.com, and producer of her own video series, Queer Mama, where she chronicles her journey of lesbian conception and pregnancy. Thrilling. Welcome, Haley.
Hello. Thanks for having me.
Well, thank you so much for joining us. We're going to start off with the question we ask all of our guests, and that is, who lives in your house?
All right. Well, it's not so much a house as it is an 800-square-foot apartment.
Well, that's unacceptable.
Unacceptable.
No.
Yep, you're going to have to get a bigger boat for your baby.
I know, right? Where are we going to put her? And I live with my now legal wife.
Woo-hoo! I know, by the way. Totally congratulations on that. That's very exciting.
Thank you. And our little 17-pound dog, Noodle.
Oh, Noodle.
How's is Noodle getting excited about the impending new life in the house?
You know, I think he's mostly confused when we snuggle and some alien creature is sticking him in the back.
Mm-hmm. That's confusing for everybody.
I'm not sure he's ready, but he does love snuggling, so he might like the baby. He does like babies. They drop food.
Yeah.
That's true. That is true.
Eventually.
Like, yeah.
It'll be a dry,
it'll be a barren wasteland for a little bit.
You're going to have to wait a little
bit. But soon, very soon, sooner than you think, your home will be littered with sausages. So, Well, let's start off and talk a little bit about the articles you're doing for Elle.com. You've contributed to them on a number of issues, including your struggles with IVF, your miscarriage, as well as a lot of the experiences you're going through with your pregnancy, your current pregnancy. And I was just wondering, I guess the first question I always wonder about people like you and like me and Teresa, who feel so willing to share everything so publicly, what kind of led to you wanting to chronicle all these experiences, especially things like IVF and your miscarriage? These are sort of topics that are a little taboo in our culture and yet clearly need to be discussed. What led you down this path?
Yeah, that's a great question. A couple things. I am a filmmaker and a creative person and have in the past, you know, been a writer at various times. And I found that when I was, you know, mentioning my pregnancy to people or that we were trying to get pregnant, people were just fascinated. you know, they always wanted to know, okay, here's these two women, you know, how are they going to do it? Who's going to be pregnant? And where are they going to get the sperm? And, you know, just a whole range of questions. And then when they learned the very, very complicated way that we decided to get pregnant, there was just a whole nother series of questions. So I thought, maybe there's something to this. Maybe people want to know about this. And I started writing for Autostraddle, which is an online lesbian magazine, and they were looking for more content from queer parents. And sort of as soon as I wrote that first article and decided to create a video and shared the video, I realized, okay, I think I'm onto something. I think this is something people want to know about. and so I decided, to share my stories more. And it turns out Elle.com was looking for more content from, you know, LGBTQ authors. I didn't know lesbians read Elle magazine, but apparently they do. some of them, hello, readers. So they asked me if I wanted to do some writing for them, and it's been really great to be able to share our sort of strange and unique stories with an audience that might otherwise, you know, not have a clue what it means to start a family as a same-sex couple.
Well, so do you think it's like, don't you think, though, that it's super healthy that people who don't know should just sit around and come up with really weird ideas and make stuff up and then just create like a weird phantom, you know, storyline for everybody out there who's not going through the heterosexual experience? You don't think that's a healthy choice for us to do?
Well, I think it's fun, but I think that, you know, the thing is, the truth is actually often stranger than fiction. Like, I don't know if they could make up as good of a story.
Well, I also think that people, when people don't allow themselves to learn about what really happens or share their experiences, it can really make us less, A, empathetic to people's experiences. And it's very easy for us to forget that we all go about this differently, but at the same time, we are all sharing similar experiences, which is, this is something we want, and it's hard, and it's not always easy. So actually, I'd really love for you, if you don't mind, to share a little bit about the process that you guys went through to do this.
Yeah, totally, yeah. So Simone and I obviously have, or maybe not obviously, since not to see us, but Simone and I have two uteruses and four ovaries between us, but no sperm. So our first decision was kind of, you know, who's going to carry the baby? And it was really pretty obvious for us. It's not always for lesbian couples. Sometimes, you know, both people in the relationship have an interest in carrying a baby, and maybe, you know, each one of them will. Simone had, like, less than zero interest. Like, I mean, she was just like, no way, you know, like, that just sounds horrifying. Like, I don't want any of it, not the body changes, not the breastfeeding, you know, like, none of it.
Did that make you feel a little bit like, maybe I shouldn't want to do that either?
Yeah, did that at all, like, be like, wait a second, what do you mean you don't want to do this?
This is so terrible. Yeah. Why do I?
Well, it's funny because I do think about, you know, straight women sometimes who might not want to carry a baby.
Yeah.
And are in a relationship with a man, and, like, they don't really get a choice. Like, if they want a child, they kind of, like, I mean, you know, they could adopt or do other things, but they want a biological child, like, they're going to have to carry that thing around and grow it themselves. So I'm pretty lucky. So I was lucky she met me, in other words. I have always wanted to carry a child. I've always thought that, like, getting pregnant would basically be the coolest thing that I could possibly do with my body, and I feel like I've done some pretty cool things with my body. But I feel like, you know, it's just always, I mean, I've always wanted a child, for one. Like, I've always just wanted to raise a child, but even, you know, sort of as an additional layer to that or separate from that, I've always thought that pregnancy seemed like the weirdest, trippiest, like, most miraculous, creepy thing that I could possibly do. And I like creepy things and weird experiences. So that part was kind of easy. We knew that I wanted to carry our future child or children. But the part that kind of, you know, maybe is a little bit more unusual for us is that Simone at some point realized that, you know, IVF is a thing and surrogacy is a thing that people can do, and that meant that her partner, me, could potentially carry her child, her genetic child.
Mm-hmm.
And so we decided that we'd love to have a genetic child from each of us, and that I would basically try to carry Simone's child through what they call, like, reciprocal IVF, basically, where you, you know, pump one of the partners full of hormones, grow as many eggs as you can, harvest them with a giant needle, fertilize them with sperm, grow them in a lab, and then transfer one or more of them to the uterus of the other partner in the hopes that they will turn into a baby, basically.
Wow.
It's amazing.
I tell you, that then totally spins my mind down, like, so if it's Simone's egg, and how much does your DNA then play into that? I mean, but mm-hmm. I mean, do you know the answer to that? Like, if it's how does that work?
So the child will have none of my DNA.
Okay.
But, you know, sometimes they'll say, oh, I'm not, like, biologically related to the child. But that's not exactly right either.
No, that's
not. Because
the
child is made of me, right?
Yeah.
Like, you know, other than, you know, the few cells that started it, like, everything has been coming from me. And
that's
the weird part
so
is
cool.
Because when we get pregnant, we have tiny bits of our, like, child DNA floating around
in
our blood.
Yeah.
I actually have now, like, Simone's DNA floating around.
That's
in
so
my body,
crazy.
Which is just totally mind-boggling.
It is. It's so cool. So you guys go through this process, and then, you know, here's the awkward question. You need the extra stuff. You need the male sperm. What did you guys do for that?
Well, so that was a whole decision-making process. In the beginning, I really wanted to use someone we knew. I felt very firmly that I, like, wanted to use what, you know, what people call a known sperm donor. So, like, a friend or a family member of ours. And, you know, some lesbian couples we know, they'll use, like, the brother of the non-carrying partner, you know.
Wow.
Something like that. Simone doesn't happen to have any, like, close male relatives, so that kind of wasn't on the table for us. And so we started kind of looking at friends. I thought, you know, God, going to a sperm bank seems so weird to me. Like, how can my future child be, like, half made of this person I never meet? And, like, people lie, like, all the time, and how would I know if it was true? So we decided we wanted to use someone we know, so our child could kind of, you know this person down the line, have access to, like, the other half of their DNA. And we ultimately settled on this friend of ours who, you know, we're close to, but not like best friends with, and is very creative and smart and attractive and all of these things. And we asked him, and very awkwardly over dinner, and he said yes. And we pursued the process with him, and unfortunately it turned out, total shock to all three of us, that he had very serious issues with his sperm.
Wow. I guess as a guy, you may not know that if you're not trying to have kids.
Exactly.
Interesting.
Totally.
What does very serious issues with the sperm mean? Like not enough?
Like,
or that's the only one I hear of, is not enough.
So low motility, which means they're not really, like, swimming right. Low morphology, which means they're not shaped right, which also contributes to swimming. And
and low count, so like low everything. So not very many of them, and the ones that were there were misshapen and were.
Oh, that turned out to be the worst dinner for this guy at all, like all together. Oh, that's the
right.
That is so.
Yep.
Oh, bad.
We basically had to deliver that information. Yeah.
Oh, okay. So the process is going really smoothly so far.
Yeah.
Nature
exactly.
is so weird
yeah.
too, because this guy is obviously like a great. Person yeah. to have yeah. to procreate because you guys selected him. You
yeah.
could have selected
totally.
Anyone. Like you were like, I want my baby to have this
yeah,
person's
this guy's
characteristics.
Vibe and everything. Yeah,
and like that's just
and
nature is
like,
fucked up.
Nope.
Yeah,
I know. Jeez. And you know, it's funny because the like one really comprehensive lesbian conception book that I read said, you know, in the sperm donor chapter, basically like if you're choosing a known donor, like. Get their sperm tested first thing, like yeah. before you formally decided, before you signed any agreements. And I read it and I thought, I don't know, that seems a little aggressive. Like, hey, we're considering you. Like, will yeah. you jerk off in a cup so we can see if your sperm's good enough?
yeah.
Like, I don't know. It just seemed kind of presumptuous.
Yeah.
And unnecessary. And he was young and fit. And now whenever anyone asks me, like, how should we choose a sperm donor or what should we think about? Like, before I talk about emotions or relationship, I'm like, go get the guy's sperm tested. Like, just
wow.
do it. Like, first thing.
That's so interesting.
Yeah.
That you know, again, what I love about these conversations is I had no reason to ever think about that.
Mm-hmm.
But lots of women do think about this, no matter what sort of relationship they're whether in a they're in a lesbian relationship or even in a you know heterosexual relationship.
Totally.
That's a real problem for people.
Mm-hmm.
That like,
yeah.
you know, even women who want to have kids without a partner and are going about
yeah.
you know this just as an independent procedure. I'm sure have run into this as well. What an interesting thing
yep.
to have to think about. Wow.
Yep.
All right. So what did you guys wind up doing? Did you just stop somebody on the bus? What did you guys do as the back? So was the backup as well thought out? Or were you like, fuck it. Let's just.
just need sperm.
Just need sperm now, guys.
Friends of that one. As LA people, you will appreciate that we consider doing a fake casting call.
That's
and then
funny.
He's like, oh, the movie fell through, but do you want to be our but we didn't actually do that. We ended up, because we were doing IVF, the clinic said that we could still use his sperm. We just had to use a special process called ICSI, where they basically select a single sperm and inject it into the egg rather than letting them try to swim and find the egg themselves. And so for a whole host of reasons, and a very long story, we ended up, you know, using his sperm anyway and ending up with, anyway.
We've got
some follow-up questions about that potentially. But, and we went forward with IVF and we ended up just with one chromosomally normal embryo, which we transferred. And I got pregnant, but the pregnancy very quickly, it turned out, was not viable. And I had a miscarriage just kind of before 7-ish weeks
Oof.
Of pregnancy, which was awful.
Yeah.
And
how long
know,
did you know? Did you know you were pregnant? Like, is it the same sort of like timeline as if you were getting pregnant, like
the old get
the
knocked
old fashioned
up
way? Like, you find out at 4 or 5 weeks, and then you
or with IVF, are they like monitoring you
yeah.
so often that you're like you knew 4 weeks
they
in?
You wait to like close 4-ish
yeah.
weeks, you know, at least almost before. It's usually like, you know, somewhere between 10 days to 2 weeks after they transfer the embryo. And so, and we kind of knew that it was murky from the beginning. Like
yeah.
they do pregnancy blood tests rather than, you know, just having you pee on a stick.
Mm-hmm.
And so the numbers were low.
Mm-hmm.
And so it kind of wasn't good news from the beginning. But then what they want to see in these beta HCG blood test is the HCG levels like doubling every
right.
48 hours. And they
yeah.
were doing that even though they were really low. So it was basically like, you know, 2 to 3 weeks of this totally mad roller coaster ride of will this pregnancy last that ended in basically a very early ultrasound to see what was going on. And the doctor being like, yeah, no, this is not continuing. Like it's not, you know, we should be seeing much more than we're seeing right now, basically.
Right.
So yeah, it was horrible.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, to go back to your earlier question, that was when
not in that specific moment, but after that was when I was just like, fuck it. I just want sperm. Like, I don't give a shit about,
No.
I just want, like, solid gold, high quality.
Yeah.
Like, you know, top of the line.
That's right.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Absolutely. So you guys decide to try again. How soon did you guys decide to try again?
It took me about 6 months to feel ready. I had my miscarriage in April, and we started trying again basically around Thanksgiving of last year. So, you know, but we decided, at first I was like, let's go right again, right away.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, yeah, no, that's not going to happen.
Right.
And I was just, I really needed time. I was super devastated. It took me like, you know, I was really honestly pretty depressed for three-ish months, maybe four, like just really sad, really demotivated, and couldn't kind of conceive of trying again. Because the weird thing is, even though I was so early, and, you know, it doesn't matter.
It doesn't matter.
Yeah, exactly. It doesn't matter at all. And then also, we've been planning for so long.
Right. Yeah.
Like, I'd known the due date for, like, 2 months before we even, like, started the cycle because we had this, like, whole calendar and, you know, everything. And so it really took me a while. And then also we had to decide, like, what were we going to do about sperm, basically, again, you know? And we kind of decided, like, let's just take the summer off. Let's, like, get drunk and be a couple and just, like, you know, put this baby-making thing to the side. Like, I think, you know, a lot of people who've tried to conceive in whatever way, even if it's just having sex, can appreciate the way things can feel very urgent, you know?
Yes.
Like, we can't wait a few more months, and when are we ever going to get this baby? And, you know, trying to give ourselves some perspective and be like, okay, once this baby comes, like, the baby's here, like, forever.
Yeah.
We should just take the summer and get drunk, you know? Or whatever.
That's really smart.
So you got drunk.
Yeah. So we got drunk. Super drunk. Went to Hawaii.
There you go.
And then we decided, because, you know, of the issues with his sperm, and because he was really the only person close to us that we had both agreed on and wanted to use, and also because it was so damn emotional dealing with that. And we were like, you know what? Maybe this time, let's just only manage our own emotions.
Yeah.
You know, like, can this just be the two of us? Like, that's complicated enough.
Right.
You know?
Totally.
So we decided to go with a sperm bank donor. And so we looked through a million profiles of mostly 22-year-old college guys. Like, I decided to date because I need some extra cash.
Hell yeah. That's honest. That's honest. Yeah.
But eventually we found someone from a sperm bank. Sperm all tested, and it was just like, oh, all we have to do is, like, pull out our credit cards, and then it's like, ship us some Zyl, and we just have it.
Hell yeah.
Yeah.
Hello.
Does Amazon Prime that shit?
Overnight delivery. Yeah, turns out they actually mail sperm, which is crazy.
That's so weird. That is strange. Yeah. That is an unusual
really
package
weird, right?
to get and be like, is this going to be my batteries and extra, like, you know, whatever I need in the house, or is this going to be the sperm? I don't know. That's so peculiar. So it arrived. You guys went through the process again, and we clearly have a go.
No, this time worked, and we kind of doubled down or tripled down. The first time we transferred one embryo to my uterus, and this time we transferred three, which is just
risky.
Kind of totally nutty.
Yep, risky. You could be your own reality show. Risky.
I know. But, you know, Simone is 39 years old, and it was, you know, the doctor's recommendation, and I thought, okay, you know what? If it's twins, I'm ready for it. Simone thought, maybe we shouldn't do this. And I basically said, look, my body, I'm only doing this horrible IVF thing one more time, so I really want to make sure it works.
Right.
And so we did it, and I am now pregnant with a baby girl.
Congratulations. It's very exciting.
Remind us how far along you are.
I am 33 weeks.
Wow. Yes, yeah, so you're in the...
Getting there.
You're in the... Getting close to the end game. To the... Yeah. To the happy Jays.
I hear the last 4 weeks are really the best.
Yeah, they are. They're something. They are something. You know what? This was such absolutely an amazing story.
Yeah.
But it's not going to allow me to ask you the 20 other awkward questions that I have about lesbians having babies. Unfortunately for me and all my normal awkward questions for people. But I do want to wrap up real quickly on the fact that you, like you said earlier, you are sharing your experience online in a video series called Queer Mama. It's on YouTube and we're going to link people up to that. And I do, it's so much fun to watch because I will say that as a person who has gone through this process twice, Teresa and I were just talking about like, oh, we totally want to have more babies. Why do we want to have more babies? Right, you know. But it's a pleasure to watch you online because you really are, and you seem online, to be thoroughly enjoying this experience. And I do think that sometimes a lot of people can get caught up in it's sort of feeling like a negative experience or too much or really overwhelming. Yeah. And it's almost like we're expected to sort of be that way a little bit. And it's a real pleasure to watch you be super joyous about this. This is probably because I just watched a lot of these videos, why I want to have another baby. So actually, if anybody's on the fence, do not go watch Haley's videos. But do you... Have you been enjoying sharing this through the video process? Are you at all worried that maybe you're like, maybe I don't want to share this much as we get towards the end? Or has this just been a really therapeutic process for you on some level?
You know, I feel like it's just been everything. I feel so creative. Like, you know, I just feel, it sounds sort of, I don't know, cheesy to say or something, but I just really feel that kind of creative energy. And it has been like, so fun to just share things with people. And I have been enjoying it so much. And I do think a big part of that is both the loss and being queer and just not being able to take any of it for granted and you know, wanting this for so long. And just knowing that it's not something everyone gets to do, you know?
Yeah.
And also knowing that even if I do get pregnant again later and we do have another child, I'm never going to have a first pregnancy like this again, you know? If I'm pregnant again, I'm going to be running after a fucking toddler. Like, I'm not going to be, like, laying in bed being like, look, my belly's moving, you know, for an hour or whatever.
Well,
I'm so impressed that you're aware of that.
I know.
Like very insightful of you. Like, I feel like I just didn't think about that.
I didn't think about that either. Yeah. Well, good job. You're doing a great job.
Yes,
because, I mean, really, it is really nice to hear you enjoying this so much and knowing that this is exactly what you're supposed to. A lot of us do not always allow ourselves to have that joy with this. And there is, it is good for you laying in bed, making everybody come look at your belly and touch it and kick it and enjoy it. And you're probably the person who, when strangers come up and say really inappropriate things to pregnant women, you're like, hell yeah, come touch it or whatever, which is great, which is probably
like the butts over here.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. So, like, I bet you, like, I wonder who's more surprised in that situation. Really? But you're doing an absolutely great job, and we wish you the best on the rest of your pregnancy. And we're going to link everybody up to the video series that's on YouTube,
awesome.
Queer Mama, and we're going to link you people up to your articles in Elle. And congratulations and good job.
Yeah.
Thank you so much. It was great to talk with you. I'll have to come back when, you know, that baby's actually here.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. We will absolutely have you back for that fun experience. Thank you so much. And have fun.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
You make me sing ooh, la, la, la. You make a girl go ooh, I'm in love.
What a joy. She is just... joy.
Yeah.
She really is super adorable pregnant lady.
That's awesome. It's really,
you watch
good
the videos. I know. I just didn't like, and I think that's what it is. We've had that conversation where I'm like, I didn't do it right the first two times. I didn't enjoy it enough. I should get pregnant again so I enjoy it more.
Mm-hmm.
She really is. And, it, you know, again, it's such a good reminder. It's sort of like our guest last week, Kimmy Gatewood, who was like, no, I'm kind of after a rough start, totally nailing the infant phase.
Yeah.
And I feel really good about it. And, That's really great.
Yeah.
That's wonderful.
It's great. It's inspiring.
Just as we should all be more honest about, like, when it is hard and that maybe some of us aren't, like, made to be magical vessels, that doesn't negate that lots of people are amazing magical vessels and knocking it out of the fucking park all the time.
Yeah.
So,
like, when people are doing a great job or really enjoying something, they're not, like, doing that to us. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah,
like,
exactly.
That's great that's awesome.
It is really good. Yeah. Everybody should be a long high five parade through the aisles
of
Target.
Need a high five parade.
I know, we do need a high five parade.
Yeah.
Well, I just thought it was great. And as always, I always find it really insightful to hear people's journeys to having kids. And it's just like such a reminder. It's like so easy to be like, they're fine. Their grass is greener, or their grass is, or they shouldn't, or they should, or whatever. It's really interesting. Let's all remember that everybody's doing something different.
Yeah.
And just be nice, everybody. Be understanding and be nice for fuck's sake. Pick up after yourself. Speaking of being nice, let's listen to somebody have a breakdown. Today, we have a very special dad rant.
All right.
Yeah, dad rant.
Hi, I'm calling with a rant. Just got back from the grocery store with my 18-month-old, and we were just getting a couple of things, so we didn't bother getting a cart. I didn't want us to strap her in and everything, so we were just walking around the store together, and she was holding my hand sometimes, or sometimes she was walking on her own, and she's fine about following me, and, you know, everyone was smiling, of course, and saying hi to her, until this one woman was walking down the aisle toward us. And she sort of had this half smile. And then when she got to us, without saying anything else, she just says, "Doesn't she get tired walking around?" Which, first of all, screw you, lady. I know when my kid gets tired, and I will take care of it appropriately. How about you just fall in line and tell me that she's cute like everyone else does? I still don't know what to say to that. But at least it won't feel like you're trying to undermine me as a parent. And second of all, she's going to get tired. That's the idea. I let her walk around and get her energy out so she'll actually take a nap in the afternoon. It really, so it really drove me crazy. And then, of course, I had this whole other thing as I was checking out where the checkout person wanted to pick her up and hold her and, like, No, you can't. You can't just pick up my child and hold her. Who are you? So it was a great, fun trip to the grocery store. Thanks for the show. Bye.
Doing it. Good job. Just such a good job. But I really like the woman trying to pick his kid up at
the
end. What is that?
That is the thing.
People are like, let me hold your baby.
No.
And I'm like, no.
What is that for you?
Like, who is that for?
I don't know.
Not helpful for me if you suddenly start holding my baby.
Right.
And maybe not every baby wants to. It's like cats. It's like, I have a cat. And everybody's like, I'm just going to come up and love on your cat. And I'm like, not all cats like to be petted.
Cats. Yeah, cats.
She's going to scratch the living shit out of you.
Yeah.
Right? Like, same with my baby. My baby's going to scratch the living shit out of you if you try and pick up my baby. Anyway, you're doing a very good job, Dad.
Yes, good job.
You're nailing it. Teresa.
Yes.
What did we learn today? Nothing is normal. Nothing will be normal again. And that's okay.
Yeah.
And to accept that as your new normal.
Yeah.
Get in line, everybody.
Yeah.
I don't know. I think that's it. I think maybe just don't ponder the question too much.
Yeah.
We should probably stop pondering all questions relating to parenting too much.
Yeah. Let's just stop talking.
Click. So let's just all accept that that is, in fact, normal.
Okay.
How's that?
Sounds great.
It is normal to thoroughly enjoy your pregnancy. It is normal to thoroughly not enjoy your pregnancy. It is normal to want a baby again when you shouldn't. Mm-hmm. Self.
Yep.
And it is normal to have a million babies.
Yep.
So it is normal
to not have babies.
To not have babies. probably more normal than anything else. Good takeaway, everybody.
You know what I think?
What?
I think people should go to iTunes and write us a great review.
Hey.
How about that?
They should.
Yeah.
Let that be the new normal.
Will you guys please go to iTunes right now and give us a 5-star review and say something nice about us?
Yeah.
That'd be so nice.
That'd be great. That'd be great. We'd love that. Also, we love when you call in and leave us genius fails and rants.
Yes.
Please continue to do so.
Yeah.
Little guidance.
Mm-hmm.
Keep it tight.
Mm-hmm.
And be clear at the beginning if it is a rant, fail, or genius. And if you are not sure, just pick.
Yeah. Just pick. One.
But I still love getting them.
Yeah.
They are a delight. Yeah. And you guys are all doing a really, really good job.
Yeah, you are.
So good job.
Yeah.
Teresa.
Yeah.
You are doing a really good job.
Thank you.
Yeah.
So are you, Biz. You are.
Thank
Biz.
You.
I
am trying my best given how I operate as a person, which is to fight everything good. So within those confines, I am fucking killing it, everybody.
That's all we can ask.
That's all we can ask. Everybody hang in there. We are going to talk to you guys next week.
Bye.
Bye. I got to low down mama blue. I got to low down mama blues. Got to low down mama blues. Low down mama blues. Got to low down mama blues. Got to low down mama blues. You know that right.
We'd like to thank Max Bunn, Lindsay Pavlis, our engineer, our husbands Stefan Lawrence and Jesse Thorne, our perfect children who provide us with inspiration to say all these horrible things, and of course, you, our listeners. To find out more about the songs you heard on today's podcast and more about the show, please go to MaximumFun.org.
One Bad Mother is a member of the Maximum Fun family of podcasts. To support the show, visit MaximumFun.org and click on Donate.
Do you have a genius or fail moment you'd like to share on the show? Then leave us a message at 206-350-9485. Full-on rage-induced rants are also welcome.
Well, Daddy may be fussing by, got low down mama blue. Oh, said Daddy may be fussing by, got low down mama blue.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned.
Listener supported.